Hello and welcome to our University of Strathclyde podcast series, run out of the world-famous School of Education, right in the heart of the beautiful city of Glasgow in Scotland. We bring you a mix of meeting academic interviews, thought pieces, conversations and provocations on all things education, to give you a glimpse into our world-leading education research here at Strathclyde, and of course to stimulate your questions and thinking around the meaning, purpose and practice of education. In schools, in communities, and of course in all our lives.
Well, hello, my name is Claire Cassidy, and today I am delighted to welcome members of the Professional Graduate Diploma in Education course management team. So we've got Catherine Whitley, who's our course leader, and we have Sharon Hunter, who is the leader of the Education Studies element of the programme. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's just start quite gently. Maybe you could tell our listeners something a wee bit about yourself. What did you do before you came here, and what do you do now that you are here at the university?
Okay, thank you, Claire, and it's lovely to be here. I am a primary teacher, and I have done most of my teaching in the county of Angus. So I lived in Montrose prior to coming to Glasgow, and I most of my experience actually in P1 to 3. And in 2007, I moved to Glasgow and joined the staff at Jordan Hill, and then worked in the Jordan Hill campus before moving into the centre of town. And when I arrived in Jordan Hill, it just so happened that many of my modules and my teaching commitments were PGDE modules. So I really enjoyed working on PGDE. I enjoyed working with students over the 36-week duration of the course. And ultimately, I joined a colleague and became deputy PGDE course leader, and then a few years ago became PGDE course leader, and I very much enjoy working with colleagues and continuing my CLPL as I go.
Sharon.
Thank you. My name is Sharon Hunter, and as Claire said, I'm the module leader for Education Studies, and I'm part of the module team for another module on the PGD called Professional Learning Through Inquiry. I also have a teaching background. I worked in secondary and then laterally in a support role, particularly in behaviour support. And so I've been working at Strathclyde, unbelievably to me, for 16 years now. My research is in the philosophy of education, and my particular interest is in children and childhood.
Great, so we've got a wealth of experience between the two of you, never mind the rest of the management team. And obviously you've both been teachers, and you probably still call yourself teachers given the work that you do.
Definitely.
And when we've got the PGDE, we've got students that are coming to us very often that have not just already got a degree, but have actually had a career before they come to us to learn about becoming a teacher. Why do you think it's a good thing to do? Why do you think that people want to be teachers, particularly after they've had a career already?
I think that there is a genuine altruism in the teaching cohort that we see at Strathclyde. I think that is the main driver for individuals choosing to come into the teaching profession. Certainly, in interview, when we ask about individuals who have had an influence on candidates, they tend to speak about someone who has had a very positive influence and how they would like to emulate the effect that that person has had on them. Sharon, I don't know if you would want to add to that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I think people have so many different reasons for coming into the profession. I mean, I certainly believe it is one of the most important jobs that there is. It's not for the faint-hearted, and it's perhaps not a job to drift into. But it is something you can do with your life, without wanting to sound too corny here. It does make a difference. It's never boring. time passes horrendously quickly because you're just doing so many different things all the time. It's a really stimulating and exciting job as well as difficult. And I think I think it's worth mentioning that it opens up a lot more possibilities than people often realize at the beginning when they're first coming in to the profession. They're only dimly aware of other aspects of education. Maybe you have a more narrow idea at the beginning because you base it on your own experience as a pupil. But as your career progresses, you realise that there are opportunities for specialisms within class teaching, and also very different avenues for promotion and progression.
I think it's the best job in the world. It has to be.
It can be, yes.
It's such good fun, and it's good fun at every age and stage. The wee ones who don't actually get a joke properly and they come up and they say knock knock, and we say who's there, and they say banana, and we say banana who, and they say it's just a banana. Yes. Because they don't get a joke, so that's good fun. And then as children get older, you can really build that rapport, and best job in the world.
Yes, I was a secondary based, and I've experience of teenagers, and that's the age group that I particularly enjoy being with. When I say enjoy, it's not unmitigated pleasure, obviously. It would be unrealistic to say it's that's what it's like, but it is it is a real privilege to be with people as they're learning, as they're growing, and as they're changing like that.
I'm going to resist the urge of asking Catherine to tell us a knock-knock joke that we all find funny. And we'll ask Catherine instead to tell us a wee bit about the course.
Okay, so PGDE is a graduate route into teacher education in Scotland, and our course is a harmonised course, and that means that there are classes that primary students and secondary students take together. And there are also classes that are sector specific. So our primary students will meet together as a primary cohort, and then the individual secondary subjects will meet by subject. So that's what I mean by a harmonised course. There are also other courses, undergraduate courses for secondary teachers or people, students who wish to become secondary teachers, I should say, and they will look at their own subjects for 2 or 3 years, and then they will follow the PGDE timetable. So PGDE is based on, the design of PGDE is based on what we would call an in-out model. So students will learn in their classes on campus for a period of time, and then they will be matched to a school for school experience. They'll go out onto placement, and then they'll come back onto campus and reflect and learn some more, and then go back into school. So that's what I mean by an in-out model.
So our taking it all about then of the ideas.
So yeah, exactly. And our modules are taken in parallel rather than sequentially. So on PGDE, we don't look at one module, complete it, and then go on to the next module. We look at modules in parallel, so that by the end of the 36 weeks, all three of our modules are completed and hopefully completed successfully. And Shaden will be able to speak a little bit about one or two of the modules, and then I can talk maybe a little bit about placement. But Claire, I don't know if that gives a bit of an idea. So we've got the 36 weeks of PGDE, and it's an equal time spent on placement. So we've got 18 weeks on campus and 18 weeks in school. It's a very demanding course. It's very intense. Students do give the course their all. We expect students to be available for study 9 to 5, 5 days a week. So it's a big commitment, and students have to be sure that that they're undertaking PGD at a time mm-hmm. of their lives that actually suits them, because it is a very demanding course. So hugely fulfilling and a tremendous achievement when you get to the end of your 36 weeks and you're in receipt of your PGDE. Great celebrations, but it's not for the faint-hearted.
And Sharon, so maybe before you say anything about the modules that you've got particular responsibility for, maybe you could say a wee bit about the philosophy that underpins the course.
Yes. Well, maybe one of the aspects that I would mention here is that we talk about teacher education rather than teacher training. And that can be the way into understanding the philosophy behind what we do. The reason for this distinction between education and training is that we want to actually go beyond teaching people how to do some of the things that teachers do, because training is really about technical skills, and there are many of these skills involved in teaching, in the job of teaching. But a teacher isn't merely a technician. A teacher has to be able to think creatively, has to be able to think critically in response to human situations. So you can't train somebody to do this, but you can help them to develop the confidence and the capacity to do it. So what's the philosophy of the course? Well, we believe that our creed is that teaching is an ethically and politically significant activity, and it cannot or should not be reduced to a set of technical know-hows.
Gosh, that's quite a nice summary of it. So how do you do that then?
I've done it before, Claire.
So how do you do that? How does that play out in terms of the modules that the students study? So Catherine said that there are three modules. You've got leadership of one, and you're part of the team on the other. So do you want to talk us through them?
Well, if I start with those two modules that I know best, or Catherine can talk about the rest of the course. So the first two modules, which are on-campus modules, so they're maybe more purely academic modules rather than having more of a practical orientation, which other aspects of the course will have. The two are firstly education studies. That's the one that I lead, and that's about looking at what education is, who and what it's for, how it functions in society. The second module, which is they're kind of companions to one another in their design, is called Professional Learning Through Inquiry. And it's about taking the first steps toward becoming what we call a reflective practitioner, thinking about what you know, what you don't yet know, and how you're going to find out, and developing the skills and the capacity and the comportment, if you like, in the classroom, where you're constantly questioning, revising, understanding, and then realizing your understanding is incomplete and moving on with that, so that you have a kind of lifelong commitment to improving your practice through that kind of inquiry.
And then there's the curriculum classes, I suppose, and the placement, Catherine.
Yep, that's right. The modules that Sharon has described each carry 20 credits. So that's, if you like, 40 credits accounted for, and every PGDE student is striving to achieve 120 credits. So the remaining module is called Professional Skills, and it's actually split into two parts. So we have the Professional Skills Curriculum and Pedagogy, and that's really the title sees it all. It's about the curricular content and how the curriculum is taught, how do children learn, and so on. So that's curriculum and pedagogy, and the other part to the final module is professional practice. So each of these two components are worth 40 credits, and that makes up then the 120 credits that every PGDE student needs to achieve. So C&P, curriculum and pedagogy, they are sector specific. So our primary students will look at, this is where, you know, how do children learn to read? How would you teach a child how to measure an angle? What about music? What about drama, health and well-being, so on? So that's where the curricular areas will sit for our primary students. And for secondary, they will be in subject specific classes. So our chemists will all meet together for C&P, curriculum and pedagogy. Our PE students will meet separately with their PE tutor. And then they will learn in curriculum and pedagogy. They will learn about assessment, about differentiation, how to plan, learning intentions, success criteria, and so forth. And then students are matched to school placements and they go out into school and then try and enact their learning in both the modules Shaden has described and in C&P.
Talk to us a wee bit about this enactment of what they've learned in placement. So they're matched to a placement school. What does that mean? They're matched to a school and what happens once they get there?
Okay, I can speak a little bit about the matching process. So we have a national mechanism for matching all student teachers in the country to placements. So that that helps avoid the war of the universities as we all try and contact schools for student placements. So it's a national system which works effectively. And students provide information to their chosen university. They provide information such as, what will my term time address be? Am I a car owner? Can I drive? That sort of information. And we upload that information onto our student placement system. And in turn, schools will do what we call make an offer. So schools will offer placements and they upload their offers into the system, and there's an automatic matching process nationally whereby the information students provide is matched to the information schools provide, and that gives a placement. So that is the mechanism. At the moment there is a travel guide of a maximum of 90 minutes. So students can be required to travel up to 90 minutes from their term time address to their school placement. Unless, of course, a student opts to live far from the university. So if a student left their term time address as Inverness, for instance, then the 90-minute rule does not apply, and what we would guarantee is that they would not be matched to a placement with a commute greater than their chosen commute to the university campus.
Okay. And when they get to school, then how does that work? Do they get thrown into primary one if they're a primary student? Do they get thrown in with higher classes if they're a secondary student? What do you do to them?
The requirements build throughout the course. So the requirements in the first placements are very much less demanding than the requirements in the final placement that will finish at the end of May. Students aren't expected to pass or fail the professional practice module halfway through the course. So they will build towards the end of the module, and they are required to meet what we call the SPR, which is the standard for provisional registration. So students are required to meet the SPR by the end of the module. So the demands are cumulative. Students in the first placement will be expected to do some, what we call solo teaching. So they will be the leaders of the learning session, and they will be expected in primary to take charge of the class, have sole responsibility for two consecutive days, as well as, you know, three mornings or four mornings or in four afternoons. So it builds up to two consecutive days. And in the final placement, they're building up to taking charge of a class for two consecutive weeks. In secondary, again, similarly, the demands are cumulative. So a student will observe, they will team teach, and they will build up to perhaps, you know, 10, 12 solo lessons in a week. And then they will build up in the second placement to perhaps, you know, 15 or so, 15, 16, 19 solo teaching sessions in the week. For primary, there are three placements. There is a primary 2 to 4 placement. So students can be in any class from primary 2 to 4. Then we do our early level placement, which is nursery or P1. And then finally in semester 2, students can be matched to P5 to P7 placement. So that's upper school.
So obviously this is a brilliant course, and well, it has to be brilliant or we wouldn't be talking.
Absolutely, there's no course better.
So we've got more people that want to do it than there are places. So what kind of people are we looking for at Strathclyde on our PGDE courses?
Well, obviously we want the very best people. But there isn't really a particular type of person that we're looking for, because in fact, we need all kinds of people in the profession. It would be fair to say that there has been a lack of diversity in teaching profession in Scotland, and the more various the teachers are, the better, because there's a variety of children and young people. What we do want them to have in common are, I suppose, a set of virtues, you could say. We want people with intellectual curiosity and open-mindedness. We want people with integrity, and we want people with compassion. Perhaps more than anything, we want people who can think for themselves and who have a commitment to social justice, to equality, and to inclusion. So those are our modest demands of our cohort on the PGDE.
I would totally agree with you, Sharon, because funnily enough, you know, you may be thinking out there, I need to be gregarious, I need to be animated. But you know, I can remember my own student placements vividly. And I remember being in school with a primary one teacher, and she was the gentlest, quietest person, and I learned so much. So we don't need to be clones of one another. We can all bring our own selves to the profession. I think from Shaden's list, I would add that I would hope that all our student teachers can demonstrate that professional love for children that helps them to thrive and helps to build the close relationships that will enable children to take advantage of the learning and the opportunities that are afforded to them. So no pressure.
And what about then? So a piece of advice for people that are thinking about coming onto our PGDE course, or even our students that are currently on the PGDE course that are listening to this. What one text would you recommend that all student teachers read? Sharon.
Oh, gosh. Well, can I only have one?
Well,
can I have one with a footnote?
You can have one with a footnote. Okay. The danger was that you were going to give us a whole reading list.
That's a temptation, because you can't really say one, but I suppose I'm going to go with one that just popped into my head, and I think it did because it was the thing that I read that I had the biggest impact on me very early on, and I think it had this impact. I'll tell you what it is in a minute, but it had this impact because it was so disruptive to everything I understood before. Because there's lots of great books about education, about inspirational educators and so on, but quite often we pursue things that fit with the stereotypes we have in our head and the kind of preconceptions we had. And the book I'm thinking about is Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it's written by a Brazilian educator. And he's talking about education as liberation. And I was so excited when I first read this. And I suppose I would love to think that every teacher going into a classroom in Scotland had read at least the first couple of chapters of this book and maybe experienced some of the excitement and bemusement that I did. But my footnote is, please just read. I just want people to read. I want them to read novels. I want them to read poetry. You're a better person. You develop yourself as a human being. You're a better writer. You're a better reader. Just read anything. It's distressing to me when I talk to students and they say, oh, I don't have time to read. There's always time to read. And even, you know, poetry, very short, keep it in the bathroom. Just read.
Catherine.
Okay, thank you.
Have you got a book you want to recommend or a text?
Yep. So I would recommend, because this is perhaps going to go to our early career colleagues and or people very, very early, not even begun their career, then I would recommend Punished by Rewards by Alfie Cohn. Mm-hmm. As a very interesting read, because our student teachers repeatedly raise concerns about their ability to manage and keep children with focused learning behaviours. That is the war cry. And I think that this would be a good text for prospective students and our current student teachers to read. I would also add that, just on the piggybacking on Shaden's point, I don't have time. Don't forget that you have audio, you know, if you don't have time to read, if you're driving, going on a journey, picking up your children or something, use audio to hear texts. And that can be a very good way of getting through things that you want to get through, but you don't have time to just sit on the couch with a book. So remember that audio versions are really useful.
I like your pick, Sharon, because it would have been my pick, other than the Women's Weekly, of course, but, you know.
Yes, I'd say, I said read anything, but actually didn't mean it. I mean, maybe not People's Friend or Women's Weekly, but reading is important, and it is something which is, if not dying out, it's on the wane, and speaking of Wayne's, that is what we're going to be encouraging them to do. And unless we're, did you see how I made the link there?
Nice.
Yeah, but so we can't encourage children and young people to read unless we have the habit ourselves. So I know probably most people listening to this have been readers. It's time to pick up the habit again.
So one last question then, because as I say, it's a hugely competitive course in terms of applying and then finding yourself a place on the course. But obviously people will still potentially be thinking, why Strathclyde? So why should people come to work with us? Why should they come to begin that professional career in teaching? Although, of course, we should acknowledge that not everyone who has a teaching qualification goes on to work as a teacher, but why should they come to us?
Ooh, well, I'll make a couple of points. First of all, we are the only ITE course, Initial Teacher Education course, in the country to have been awarded a Excellence in Professional Learning Charter from the General Teaching Council for Scotland. So we're the only course that hold that. Secondly, we have a city centre location. Glasgow's a wonderful, vibrant city, so we would certainly say that we have a lot to offer in the university's location, the campus's location. We have a wide number, as you said at the outset, Claire, with a wide number of colleagues that teach on PGDE, and so the students can benefit from that range of skills and experiences. We have a big course. We have, you know, 1,000 PGDE students, so we have a high number of staff, and I think that's a good thing. We can bring a real richness to students' learning due to the numbers we have. And I don't want to hog all the reasons because I could speak for quite a wee while. Sharon, do you want to take on the baton and then I can round off with the master's level credits?
Okay.
The icing on the cake.
Yeah, I would support everything that Catherine just said there. It is a nice place to work and study. It's a nice place to be when we're allowed back. And it is a big course, and there are disadvantages and advantages to that. But one of the great advantages is the sheer variety of people that you'll meet on the course. Every year I meet students who become friends, because they're, with that many people, you're bound to meet somebody you really click with. And I think that is really important, because we encourage people to think about their, well, you could call it professional networking. I like to call it making friends and talking about education, talking about your work, talking about your interests with like-minded people. And so basically on a course of that size, you're more likely to make those lifelong contacts, professional and personal contacts.
And master's level credits, Catherine?
Okay, so the PGDE at the University of Strathclyde carries with it the opportunity for students to achieve 120 master's level credits at no extra charge. Now we have students who come and join us who know the cost of undertaking masters if they were to undertake them in some other way other than PGDE. So it's not something to be sneezed at. The potential for 120 free master's credits without a monetary charge. So that's something that is not matched by any other PGDE in the country either.
Excellent. Well, that's a nice positive note to finish on. So thank you both very much. Obviously, we've got information about the PGDE on the website, but people can listen to this again and again and benefit from your pearls of wisdom, and there'll be contact details on the website as well if there's anything that they want to follow up on. So thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening in to our Strathclyde Education Podcast Series. We'll be back soon with another episode.